KZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. At the Munich Security Conference, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky saying his country isn't going to just sign off at any deal that the U.S. and Russia comes up with to end the war in his country. Telling J.D. Vance, who spoke yesterday,
I think it's important that Vice President understood me that if we want to sign something, we have to understand that it will work and it will be very positive for both nations. And it will bring money and security.
A random stabbing attack in southern Austria today, leaving a 14-year-old dead, four people injured. Police say a 23-year-old Syrian national was arrested. Authorities are investigating whether or not he acted alone. A deadly stampede at the New Delhi railway station in India has left multiple people dead, at least 15 injured. Thousands were gathered to board trains to a major Hindu festival. This is ABC News. This week's Consumer Price Index confirmed what Americans already know. The price of eggs has reached a record high. The average price of a dozen grade A eggs reaching $4.95 in January. Some places are selling eggs for $10 a dozen. Michelle Kinney was looking for eggs at the West Palm Beach Green Market in Florida.
Well, I actually went yesterday to the store and was literally shocked to see the dozen of eggs at $9.26. And Costco had them about $24, $25 a four flat. And I mean, it's literally shocking.
The man accused of shooting a teenager who went to the wrong Kansas City house has admitted guilt in the case. 86-year-old Andrew Lester pleaded guilty to second-degree assault on a lesser charge in the 2023 shooting of then-16-year-old Ralph Jarl, who rang Lester's doorbell after he went to the wrong house. Lester was supposed to pick up his younger twin siblings. Lester's charge carries up to 7 years in prison time. Dave Packer, ABC News.
America is kept safe because the Army National Guard responds, protects, and supports our nation when it needs them most. From fighting wildfires with air support, helping civilians in flooded neighborhoods, to delivering food and supplies to those who have lost everything, the Army National Guard always responds when disaster strikes. The Army National Guard also trains to be ever vigilant against threats, foreign and domestic. They protect our skies with missile defense weaponry. They secure our information, communications, and infrastructure with cybersecurity. And they protect us against chemical, biological, and radiological hazards with the civilian support team. The Army National Guard also stands ready to deploy and provide support for conflicts or humanitarian missions abroad. Join the Army National Guard and be there to respond, protect, and support your community and your country. Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
I'm James Kelly with WBZH News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tome Olson. La Crosse is encouraging residents to build tiny homes to help solve the housing shortage. Here's Judith Ruiz Branch.
After the city was awarded nearly $20,000 last year through AARP Wisconsin's Community Challenge, it asked residents to submit ADU designs to show the community what's possible in their own backyards. La Crosse Environmental and Sustainability Planner Lewis Coleman says the secondary housing units can be attached to or separate from the main house.
The top three ADU designs that we picked were based on affordability, accessibility, and sustainability. So we wanted to make sure that these were residences that were in reach from a cost perspective.
The three finalists were selected from 26 submissions and were each awarded $3,000. Coleman says what's left of the grant money will potentially be used to make the winning concepts into ready-to-build plans. In addition to seeing ADUs as a way to increase homes, Coleman says they can offer financial support for homeowners who rent them out. They can also provide multi-generational housing for parents of children with disabilities or children who want to live near their aging parents. However, Coleman adds there are some downfalls, especially in light of rising construction costs.
In some cases, it could cost as much as a full-size house, so that's still a challenge. And one of the things we're looking at is working with our local lenders to put together financial packages that could make it easier for homeowners to add this to their backyard.
For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tome Olson.
Radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. A cloudy sky for today with a few flurries and snow showers. A high in the mid-20s. For tonight, there still could be some flurries around. Colder and breezy. A low near 5. And mostly cloudy for tomorrow. A high only in the low teens. Right now it's 22.
Let's rock some local music this weekend on Max Inc. Join us as we welcome Kaylin Cole and Lexi Liu, plus Yanni and Rocker will stop in for a visit. It's Max Inc. Saturday and Sunday evenings at 6 across the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Yes, it is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Yeah, if you're watching the YouTube version of this, where's Johnny? Well, Jess, we can announce that he's admitted science is real.
He has.
Yeah, and said that he did have the flu.
Mm-hmm.
No flu today, just the reality of now that he doesn't have the flu, he has to go up and, he has to work.
Indeed.
During the day sometimes. Yeah, so we're gonna give Johnny a pass today. But Jess, how you doing today, my friend?
Well, I'm a little tired. Oh, man, Tim, it has been a couple weeks here just trying to navigate through the fire hose of nonsense and hurtful actions. But I'm doing my best here to be present and to be grateful for all of the wonderful opportunities that we have. And to be present with some educated educators, that is a fantastic thing. How are you doing, Tim?
I was thinking, it's just like every show, whether it's, the broadcast show on, that we're doing now, whether it's the podcast we're dropping, I'm getting tired of kind of coming in with the, this is how I'm dealing with it. And I don't know if Johnny's rubbing off on me, but I'm kind of saying, okay, we're going to sing in dark times. And so, I'm going to put a little bit of forward going like, hey, We got this.
Well, I appreciate that.
That's what we do here, though. We bust all kinds of pencils. And in fact, today, really happy. Got a great guest. Just to recap, go back and listen to the podcast that dropped last Wednesday with Dr. Nancy Carlson Page. Looking at the whole, quote, science of reading, the lawsuit in Massachusetts, lots going on there, the whole movement. And he said, we need to spend a Saturday show really digging into this. So, he's been on the show before. He's been on the podcast. He's been on the radio show. He is a professor of education at Furman University. He's taught high school English and rural South Carolina before moving on to teacher education. He's also a former column editor for the English Journal, Council of Teachers of English. He's got all kinds of books. Check out his website. Go to radicalscholarship.com and you will meet our guest, Dr. Paul Thomas. Paul, how you doing, my friend?
Oh, I think the same as y'all are, the best under the circumstances down here in South Carolina.
Oh, you're down there. I forgot about that. You know what, though, Paul? I got to say this. So, being in Ohio right now, I'm not so sure that it's a whole lot different in Ohio than it is in South Carolina or Mississippi anymore.
Yeah, sadly, that's a trend. Yes, there are some pockets, though, where it is a little better to be.
Yeah, but, right now, in fact, this week, big debate in Columbus right now, Senate Bill 1 – which again is a revamp of the controversial issues type of deal, no diversity, equity, inclusion, critical race theory, and for college faculty too, specifically. We need to keep those college faculty members under control before they indoctrinate the entire population of Ohio to believe in, I don't even know what to believe in, but hey, you know, here in Ohio, we're making sure then that we continue to be patriotic. But Paul, Science of Reading, you are all over this. In fact, I say again, remind everybody, go to radicalscholarship.com if you want to understand all of the ins and outs of Science of Reading. Paul is the person to turn to. Paul, here we are, Science of Reading. Why don't you maybe, dude, just give our listener a kind of 101. What's happening, Science of Reading? What does Paul Thomas, when you hear Science of Reading, Paul, educate us.
Well, it's I'd say it's just the newest version of the reading wars that we've seen for a century. But it's kind of exploded pretty much over, since 2018. And the reality of it is that it has morphed from being sort of a media movement, and now it is legislation. And the thing that's, you know, that's facing us as educators is, while I still spend a little bit of time trying to, you know, challenge and debunk the movement, we've got to figure out how to, you know, manage the reality of really bad reading legislation. And, you know, it's it has cycled back up because of the release of NAEP scores. And miraculously, we don't care about Mississippi that much anymore, which became the poster child for the Science of Reading in 2019. The new cycle is, it's going to be Louisiana. Which is, you know, it's just one thing I'm focusing. I've got an upper level reading and writing course right now. And, you know, I warned them when they're doing a media analysis project. And I said that the media is obsessed with outliers. And that's really contradictory to being scientific, because anybody who understands statistics and science is, outliers kind of ruin the information. It ruins the data. And in many cases, you want to ignore the outliers, or at least, you know, put it in context. But in education journalism, we focus on outliers. And that's what we're, you know, we're going through another. It's kind of interesting because Florida is just getting hammered. They've got their lowest NAEP scores in 23 years or something like that. And they already were struggling because people had caught on. Florida and Mississippi are essentially the same. You get these outlandish grade four scores, but they drop from the top 25% in grade four to the bottom 25% of grade eight, because the scores are a mirage. They're not, you know, they're manipulated by grade retention. And that's, I think that's what Louisiana is doing also.
You know, and on that too, just a reminder, the NAEP scores, we were talking about this also. You know, we've kind of gone over that. The National Assessment of Educational Progress, typically sometimes referred to as, you know, the nation's report card. And, you know, particularly since, well, actually, Paul and I know this, for the last 30 plus years, there's been some form of using the NAEP to point out how awful public schools are in America. A constant story, as you say, Paul, constant crisis. Never any good news. And occasionally when there is good news, yeah, some form of an outlier somebody likes to grab onto. But those scores, you know, reading and math, and we hear about them, fourth and eighth grade scores, particular listener on Busted Pencil, you know, when we came back from COVID, oh my goodness, learning loss as indicated by NAEP scores and state test scores. Everybody was just, you know, all beside themselves. But Paul, you know, you point something out though too here, and you and I know that it's kind of like, okay, there's probably not a cause and effect science relationship here, but the reality is that for this point though too, as you said, Florida's horrible, the drop, and so this new release of NAEP scores shows a drop, and for some reason we don't think the science of reading caused the drop, even though it's been utilized now for 10 years in some places, at least five wholeheartedly. But, you know, when people said, well, I guess the science of reading isn't working, the first response out of the science of reading people was, hey, that's all due to out of school factors, has nothing to do with the science of reading. Paul, riff on that a little bit.
Yeah, that's there's two things going on here. One, for 30 years, NAEP data was flat. And according to the science of reading people, that's a crisis, and it's because of balanced literacy. Mm. Since 2019, we've had two consecutive rounds of dropping scores when almost every state has some form of science of reading. And like you mentioned, Mississippi goes back to 2014. This has been, you know, a decade of this, which has not impacted the later grades. And then you see the drop in states like Mississippi and Florida. But miraculously, when we said that the flat scores for 30 years was connected to poverty, we were told that was just an excuse. But now when we say, wait, the scores are dropping, it's, you know, the only thing you can blame are in-school practices. The science of reading people are like, no, 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 it's the COVID learning loss, which honestly, the truth is both are true.
Right.
Poverty and COVID learning loss, or COVID impact, I don't like saying learning loss, are real. It's just that they want to play, you know, two different games. And that's my big problem. Science of reading people don't use science for what they choose to implement. They implement practices that are not supported by science. They're just as ideological. They're picking and choosing too. So I think they deserve being told that this is a failure of science of reading because we're using their logic. What's fair for, you know, what's fair for the goose is good for the gander.
That's it, you know, and we want to put that out there. You know, hey, the NAEP scores that just came out, they dropped. And, you know, when we're always looking for the cause, the boogeyman, the crisis, you know, maybe here on Busted Pencils, we're pointing out that maybe the crisis is the science of reading that, again, not science, but a marketing term, largely using science as a marketing term, to sell. That's really what we're talking about here, to sell curriculum. Our guest is Dr. Paul Thomas. Check out his blog, radicalscholarship.com. We're in here breaking it down, science of reading. You know, and Paul, we're getting ready to come up on a break, but I want to kind of set this up. We had on Wednesday on the podcast, we had Dr. Nancy Carlson Page. Yes, that is Matt Damon's mom, you know, early childhood literacy person. She put in a, you know, an op-ed in the Boston Globe where highlighted what's happening in Massachusetts, where parents are suing the makers of balanced literacy curriculum and materials and essentially saying, you use faulty materials and my kids can't read. Somebody has to pay. Why wasn't the science of reading being out there? We got a whole bunch right there. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded. Paul, you got to come back, man. What do we do? Should we be suing people when our kids can't learn? It's Busted Pencils. We'll be back right after the break.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Up North News Radio.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Believe it or not, it is once again time for Wisconsinites to head to the polls and vote. I know, we all have a bit of election fatigue after 2024, but the spring election primary is coming up on Tuesday, February 18th. One race that will be on every ballot statewide for the spring primary is for state superintendent. Incumbent Jill Underley is seeking another term, and two candidates are challenging her. Jeff Wright, superintendent for Sauk Prairie Schools, and Brittany Kinzer, an education consultant and former charter school executive. Kinzer's candidacy in particular is gaining steam. Her campaign reported raising more than $500,000, far more than what Underly or Wright have brought in. With that type of financial support, this could prove to be a more competitive race for state superintendent than what we've seen in quite some time. This is becoming a real race to watch.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us. This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
You gotta come back. A little bit of Black Flag. Yes, it's Busted Pencils. Fully led it education talking. Educated educators talking education. Man, I'd like to have, you know, if Black Flag would have done a Super Bowl show, what that would have looked like.
That would have rocked.
Yeah. You know, I mean, that's what we do. Hey, our guest is Dr. Paul Thomas. We're here breaking it down. His, again, check out his blog, radicalscholarship.com. Science of reading. You want to understand the complexity here, the reality of all of the kind of craziness that's happening. Paul is my go-to person to really get a sense of really trying to deeply understand this. Because, you know, Paul, we were talking about this. So in Massachusetts, parents, and again, I always question whether parents are truly behind this, but parents are suing balanced literacy curriculum providers and even a couple of the creators of this. And simplicity is they're saying these theoreticians in literacy and this curriculum caused their kids to not learn how to read. And we should have known that because the science of reading was fully available, but Massachusetts chose to use a faulty curriculum that caused horrible damages to these students. And so we're going to sue for using balanced literacy. Help me understand, Paul.
Yeah, I think there's several things here that are really important to think about. One is that, you know, the NAEP data, we're saying over 30 years right now. In the United States, over that 30 years, dozens of reading programs, hundreds of different approaches to teaching were done. The United States is not a unified curriculum sort of country. We're a patchwork. And
yeah, I mean, you think about that, the patchwork part there. Yeah, you know, people go, where'd Paul go? Hey, you know, got a dog back there working. There you go, Paul, but you're back.
Might be calm down now, sorry. The other thing is there's zero studies linking a causal relationship between reading programs and reading outcomes by students. This is purely an ideological, rhetorical claim that somehow balanced literacy has failed. We did the same thing with whole language in the 90s. There simply is no evidence for this claim. The other thing I think is really important to point out is about a year ago, there was a survey of parents about reading. And when they were asked, you know, how do you feel about reading instruction for your children? Parents were positive. It was very positive. Then those same parents were told that NAEP scores were terrible on reading, and parents changed their minds. Even if parents are upset, and I'm sure there are parents who are upset, they are victims too. They're victims of the propaganda. They're victims of people don't understand what NAEP proficiency means. We haven't mentioned this, but NAEP proficiency is set at the 70th percentile. It's way above grade level. Virtually every state in the United States uses the term proficiency equal to NAEP basic. So when journalists say that two-thirds of students aren't proficient, technically on NAEP, that's true, but it doesn't really mean anything. It means that two-thirds of students aren't way above grade level, so I don't even know, you know, are we upset by that? I'm not sure. I think it's really important for people to understand, too, The United States has no standard definition for grade level, no standard definition for proficiency. And I think that's a huge problem. And I really think NAEP does that on purpose. It helps create this idea that, or this belief that there's a crisis.
Well, and that part there too, I can't emphasize that and reemphasize that again, proficient. And, you know, the kind of language, you know, distortion that people use when, you know, proficient for my neighbor sounds like, you know, grade level, sounds like it's what we should be, you know. Well, I want everybody to be proficient. And so when you hear that, quote, 2/3 of students aren't proficient, we need to really have a public relations education campaign that says, what does proficient really stand for? Because proficient by NAEP scores is kind of like this, like above grade level, sort of gifted, a kind of standard that is aspirational, maybe is the thing, but it's not a measurement of reading, you know, fluency, or maybe not the right word, but the ability to read. Because if we were going to do that, we might be interested, and again, this isn't without its flaws, but grade level. So are fourth graders reading at the fourth grade level, and how many of them are reading at the fourth grade level? And combine that with the ones that are, quote, proficient, all of a sudden you're going to probably get that, guess what? Over 2/3 of students are at grade level or at proficient. Crisis disappears.
Right. And I think, too, we don't talk about, with human behavior, you're never going to have 100%. So I think we need to really talk about these terms. And I think if we had a unified term for states and for national testing, I think that would be a good idea. But I also think we have to have a national discussion about what is our threshold. I don't think we can ever expect 100% of students, but there has to be a reasonable number. There has to be, you know, 2/3 aren't at grade level. I mean, 2/3 are at grade level or above. That means about 1/3 is below grade level. We probably can't tolerate that. And also, we certainly can't tolerate that there are subgroups that are way, way worse off than that. You know, Black and brown students and special needs students and multilingual learners are way, you know, that percentage is way higher. So I have absolutely no problem with that sort of statistical conversation, but we don't have it. We're using the numbers to misrepresent. We're certainly not using the numbers to help those children particularly.
Well, and yeah, that's the part here too, is, you know, again, listening to Paul and I, this is not a conversation about, hey, whatever kids don't learn to read, you know, not our problem. We just need to represent the statistics the right way. Yes, we need to represent the statistics the right way. And yes, any student below grade level or struggling, what are we doing to help them? The reality is that what's happened in this kind of sleight of hand, using marketing terms instead of truly science, is that we've taken and created a crisis of almost nobody in America learns how to read, and that the only way to fix that is by changing the curriculum. Hey, and you know, if you happen to be one of those people that sells that curriculum and you're in Ohio, good deal, man, because Ohio just mandated that you're the only person that teachers can buy curriculum off of. Oh, that's a whole other can of worms that we're going with. Our guest is Dr. Paul Thomas. His blog, RadicalScholarship.com, Science of Reading. Dr. Nancy Carlson Page, our guest last Wednesday, gave us something to think about. Come back, though, Paul, too. Besides this, I want to hit on what Nancy said. Is this a right-wing movement? Busted Pencils, back after the break.
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Allball Show.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. At the Munich Security Conference, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky saying his country isn't going to just sign off at any deal that the U.S. and Russia comes up with to end the war in his country. Telling J.D. Vance, who spoke yesterday,
I think it's important that Vice President understood me that if we want to sign something, we have to understand that it will work and it will be very positive for both nations. And it will bring money and security.
A random stabbing attack in southern Austria today, leaving a 14-year-old dead, four people injured. Police say a 23-year-old Syrian national was arrested. Authorities are investigating whether or not he acted alone. A deadly stampede at the New Delhi railway station in India has left multiple people dead, at least 15 injured. Thousands were gathered to board trains to a major Hindu festival. This is ABC News.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Wisconsin gets the win at Purdue. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Number 16th ranked Wisconsin with a huge victory today on the road over number 7th ranked Purdue. The final 94-84 in favor of Wisconsin. The Badgers trailed by 9. And then Kamari McGee ejected on a controversial call. The ref saying he hit a Purdue player below the belt who was setting a pick. Head coach Greg Gard after the win.
You know, with Kamari getting ejected from the game, I think they just threw gas on our fire. And obviously just big play after big play. Klesman was big down the stretch. John Tanjay made big shots. They found each other in terms of milking the layup or a back cut for a dunk. And then how about Jack Janicki? First time in Mackey as a freshman, and he's out there like he's been here 10 times. So heck of a team effort. Really proud of this group. You know, that's a really good team on the other side. But as I told them, we're for real. We're really good ourselves.
John Tanjay led with 32 points. The Badgers now begin a three-game home stretch Tuesday night against Illinois. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. A cloudy sky for today with a few flurries and snow showers. A high in the mid-20s. For tonight, there still could be some flurries around. Colder and breezy. A low near 5. And mostly cloudy for tomorrow. A high only in the low teens.
Currently 23 degrees.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. While attacks on democracy norms ensue in Washington, state legislatures have also been busy. We have updates from Utah, Kansas, Indiana, and the contested North Carolina Supreme Court race. Voting Rights Lab reports that the Utah House is considering HB 300, which forces mail-in ballot users to deliver their ballot not by mail, but by hand to an official polling place where an ID can be presented. The elderly, disabled, and other voters for whom returning by mail is their only option would need to seek special permission. HB 332 would withdraw Utah from the Cooperative Electronic Registration Data Center, the subject of far-right conspiracy theories. The Kansas Senate passed SB 4, which requires receipt of mail-in ballots by 7 p.m. Election Day to count, rather than the current 3 days after. An Indiana Senate committee advanced SB 284, shortening early in-person voting from 28 days to 14 days, ending at noon the day before Election Day. The full Senate passed SB 10, ending use of school-issued student identification as ID for voting. In North Carolina, a district court judge dismissed a claim by a state Supreme Court candidate that in a race he lost by 734 votes, as many as 65,000 voters were ineligible. A federal appeals court may revisit it. We've linked the Voting Rights Lab tracker at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Marquette University professor and pollster extraordinaire Charles Franklin.
Deporting immigrants who are in the U.S. illegally. 60% support that. But when we ask the same question and just add at the end, including those with jobs and no criminal record, then support drops to just 43%.
Wisconsinites have a sense of fairness.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, are you exhausted, tired, fed up? We get it, but we want you to get involved. Luann Bird is going to join us to talk about ways to keep going. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Yeah, that's just on the boards. We know it. A hailstorm there. Loving it. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Besides the best education talk, the best bumper music out there right now.
You're welcome.
Jess, we love that. Hey, sorry about that. Our guest is Dr. Paul Thomas, radicalscholarship.com, looking at Massachusetts, the lawsuit, science of reading. You know, Paul, too, though, you know, your bio, you're a teacher educator. Tell us a little bit about the journey that gets you to this point where we would be able to say, hey, Paul, we need you on the show to help us understand this.
Sure. Coincidentally, I started teaching in 1984, which in South Carolina was the beginning of the, you know, the accountability era. That's, you know, we had Governor Dick Riley, which is kind of, you know, one of the first governors to really commit to education reform. And even though I'm a strong critic of education reform, Dick Riley is a great guy. And he did a really good job for South Carolina. And I don't think he envisioned that education reform would become this sort of crisis cycle that it's become. And I've been doing this now 41 years. So I've been a literacy educator for 41 years. But the last, since 2018, I've been doing almost exclusively my writing, my blogging and my public speaking has almost exclusively been directed at, you know, the science of reading movement, the legislation around. I did a policy brief for NEPC in Boulder, Colorado, which I think was a really important thing that I did. And I've got a book on the science of reading that's in its second edition. And then I would say maybe regretfully, but I blog on this probably once or twice a week, if not more.
Absolutely. As I said, check it out, you know, to the blog, radicalscholarship.com. All right. So, Paul, you know, crisis rhetoric, nonsense, you know, mythology, NAEP scores, they're dropping, science of reading, you know, and but when we, you know, we had Nancy on, like I said, on Wednesday, you know, she took a moment, though, and said, you know what, though, Tim, I want to make sure, though, that we remind everybody that this isn't also just like a discussion about what's the better curriculum. Understand the movement that is putting forth science of reading is part of a larger right-wing kind of, you know, disinfecting the curriculum from critical race theory, banning books. So when people hear science of reading, it's not a separate kind of thing that's out there. This is just one more, I guess, arrow in the quiver of the right-wing attempt to dominate public education in America.
Go ahead.
I think
it's really important to, you know, I always talk about the science of reading as a multiverse. my comic book background coming through there, but you know, it's there's a media and a political science of reading movement, and I think that's the dominant one. And then the other one is the marketing that you mentioned a minute ago, and the media and political and the marketing really strongly work together. And the smaller part of that multiverse is the actual reading science, which is a thing. We have a body of science, but it almost doesn't even matter. And of course, marketing, the capitalism, you can't ignore. That is a very conservative strain of this. But if people pay attention, Moms for Liberty are constantly, you know, promoting science of reading on social media. George W. Bush and his wife gave Emily Hanford an award for her work on the science of reading. And Jeb Bush, his organization in Florida, Excel in Ed, they are huge and kind of a shadow part of this, because they have a template for science of reading legislation on their blog, on their website, that states are just taking and just plugging in state-specific things and passing legislation. And I think it's really important you mentioned this, but people don't tend to pay attention to it. The science of reading movement and the censorship movements are strongly overlapping. Historically in the United States, the pro phonics and the censorship agendas have been linked together for decades and decades. I emphasize, you know, there was a whole article in the 80s on a family.
Are you talking about the Gablers?
Exactly.
I knew where you were going.
They spent their whole lives saying we need to teach more phonics and then banning and censoring and saying that schools were indoctrinating. And it's kind of creepy to read that now, but I mean, this was in the 80s.
Yeah.
So there is a very strong overlap that connects the science of reading with the censorship movements that are going on, because these are essentially conservative ideologies.
And that's the part too, is to recognize, you know, so what is being mandated to be taught? Also, then you should be asking the question, what is leaving that used to be taught? And you might be surprised, listener, or if you want to talk to your neighbor to ask them this question, ask about the books they read or that were read to them when they were in school, and then do a kind of quick look and go and see how many of those books that they grew up with are now truly on banned book lists. And I think that's how you start to wake people up to go, well, wait a minute. That was one of my most favorite books growing up. You mean to tell me it's banned? Yes, it's banned. Why? Because this isn't really about creating proficient readers. This is about sanitizing a curriculum that there's a belief behind that, you know, the American public education system particularly has been responsible for this socialist, crazy liberal indoctrination that I've always contended is really bad at doing that job, because we're the most ultra-capitalistic country in the world. So for so much for the indoctrination, it's just not working, if that was the case. But understanding that this is, you know, this is a sanitation movement as much as it to the extent that it has nothing to do with increasing the number of students who struggle reading, helping them become better readers. That isn't me saying this to those teachers out there that are saying, I use science of reading and it really helps a lot of my kids, and that's what matters to me. We know, you teachers out there, that we know what matters to you is helping those young readers learn to read, helping struggling older students learn to read, creating that. And so having the tool of phonics and things like that, we want you to continue to have those. What else is missing from your toolbox, though, and this is what Dr. Nancy Carlson Page was saying, is that we're ripping away from the toolbox of literacy instructors lots of different ways that kids come to learn to read, Paul.
Right. And as we mentioned in an earlier segment, the science of reading now has been around 10 years in many places, at least 5 years in a lot of places, and schools are being forced to adopt scripted curriculum. It's called structured literacy, but it's scripted curriculum. The early research on scripted curriculum is that it's whitewashing the curriculum. Mm-hmm. Two things that are happening is the mandated and included text in these structured literacy programs are very white, very anemic. They focus on things like decoding as opposed to what's in the act, you know, the content of the actual text. But also students are being asked less and less to stay engaged with longer text. So they're just reading what I would call textbook reading. They're reading things that are written for a textbook, which absolutely no human wants to read, as opposed to what I would call authentic text, like picture books. And picture books are some of the books being attacked the most in the censorship movement. That's why I was saying there's a strong overlap of the two. The approved curriculum is very much whitewashed, and it's very, you know, it's very anemic, and it's very mechanical. But also kids don't have access to books in their school libraries. And the classroom libraries have been decimated. Most teachers have had all the books taken out of their classrooms because of one or two parents. And then, you know, there's been studies on this. Some of the huge censorship in states like Florida have been linked to one in two people. Right. And I think we've got to start asking, what about parental rights when the parent wants the books accessible? We don't listen to parents who say, I want these books to be in the library in case there are, you know, my kids or other kids want access to them. It really offends me when we talk about, you know, parental rights, because we're only privileging some parents' rights, not all parents' rights.
Yeah. You think about that. It's just like, you know what? In fact, whatever your parent right is, it's not your right to tell me what my kids can't learn, you know? Right. And even that, it sets up these, you know, enemies, protagonists, all these ways that really separate people. When I said, I think most of the time you go up and down the street here and talk to most of my neighbors and you point out some, you know, books and they'd say, oh yeah, we read that. And you say, hey, it's banned. They're like, what do you mean it's banned? There would be a more coming together of going, well, that doesn't make sense. And it truly doesn't make sense. I want to, you know, point out, as you said, Paul, the policy aspect of this, how deep it's gotten. And I know that Ohio's not the only state that does this, but Ohio colleges across the state, private and public, had to submit documentation to the State Department of Education, higher education, to the governor's office, curriculum materials that demonstrated that the science of reading was the only technique or theory that was being taught to future teachers. And if those institutions, colleges, universities, private and public, were found to be using balanced literacy or anything like that, they would have 1 year to fix it or lose their ability to grant a teaching license. And I just look at that and I'm like, you know what, whatever you think about it, I'm sorry, but that is absolutely an assault on academic freedom.
Yes, this is a subset of the kind of Trump bullying that we're seeing going on right now. The science of reading movement has become a bullying movement. There's a lot of threat for funding. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of threats, you know, for allowing states and colleges to be able to certify. I've witnessed it in multiple places, and there's just way too strong a relationship. Even in Arkansas, you know, Arkansas way back several years ago banned balanced literacy, three queuing and guessing in legislation, and specifically banned like units of study. We should have mentioned this in the segment earlier, but you know, at its peak, Lucy Calkins units of study was in only about one out of every about 20% of schools. Mm. Now how you can sue someone for causing a national reading crisis when 80% of the schools use some other program is beyond me. It defies any kind of logic to try to blame any of this, especially because the definitions they use for balanced literacy and 3Qing especially isn't even accurate. I'm not sure they would know if they saw balanced literacy.
They wouldn't see it. They wouldn't know it. We've had a great discussion. Our guest, Dr. Paul Thomas. Paul, too, just to remind, the book you were mentioning, what's the title? Where can people get it?
If they'll just go to my blog, it's How to End the Reading War.
How to End the Reading War.
Yeah, yeah.
And we'll make sure we're going to make sure that it's linked to and into the podcast so people can get that. You know what? Hey, Jess and Tim are going to break it down when we get back. But Paul, man. As always, thanks for busting pencils, man.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
We'll be right back.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Imagine home. The smell of coffee, the sound of a lawnmower, the sun's warmth on your face, free to be yourself, surrounded by love that helps you grow. This is a place to call home. That's an American dream we all deserve. But in 50% of U.S. states, you could legally be denied housing if you are LGBTQ+. Get the facts and hear real stories at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
The Dom Salvia Show.
Inflation has to go down. How would you suggest your president address that? He's not talking about the cost for Americans. Hell, everything he's doing seems to going to increase the cost for Americans, starting with trade wars with Canada and Mexico. So if there is something positive out of this administration, let me know what it is. I would absolutely give credit where credit is due if I see it.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Now we're back. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Great guest, Dr. Paul Thomas, sitting with us for three segments. Science of Reading, Dr. Nancy Carlson Page, last Wednesday on the podcast. Massachusetts parents suing curriculum makers for not using the science of reading. Had to bring in a little bit more depth again for you out there listening to make sure that, you know, you can understand there's a complexity here. And then within the complexity, Jess, I was thinking about this, there's also a simplicity.
Right.
And the simplicity here is that, look, this is a right-wing movement to censor curriculum. The simplicity is this is a censorship movement.
Right. There's also the simplicity of if you want your child to be best served by teachers, if you want your child, regardless of their strengths in a reading or where they struggle, to be successful, their teachers need access to a huge toolbox. Their teachers need the flexibility, the agility to be able to say this tool works wonderfully for this student and this student over here needs a different tool. That's not a problem. Right. That's not a failure on the part of student A or student B. That's just kids.
Those darn kids. They require so many different ways to help them learn. Darn it. I wish they'd all be easy. No, you don't. No, I don't. And in fact, you just pointed that out. And, anybody who's been listening to Busted Pencils for the longest time knows I always point out my daughter's issue with that.
Oh, her darn dibbles.
By first grade, guess what? She was already reading books. But because the curriculum, kind of a precursor to the science of reading called the dibbles, in fact, dibbles is still now very much a part of the science of reading. Her first grade teacher was very alarmed that her fluency, that is how fast she could read nonsense words, was lagging because
it was nonsense
words. Reading nonsense words quickly is definitely the sign of catastrophe. but again, though, this is what happens because that teacher was only really allowed to use that.
Mm-hmm.
You can see then, though, too, that they were saying, well, the indicators here, Tim and, my wife, Michelle, is that Lacey's struggling and, kind of had to kind of come back in and go, but she's already reading real words in real books. Mm-hmm. And her fluency, and again, I'm always cautioning people that speed in how quickly people can do math, how quickly people can read, isn't really an indicator of excellence, and being slow isn't an indicator of failure.
Right.
Either.
We are each individuals, and there are some things that come to us very quickly. And there are some things that take time, and yet we will understand them much deeper. So speed is one thing, but depth of understanding and enjoyment of learning and igniting that spark in someone that goes, hey, this is incredibly fulfilling to me and I want to take my time in it. I want to make sure that I have real mastery of it. That's a different thing than speed.
Exactly. And in fact, you know, pointing that out, and think of how many students then very early on when we're, quote, speed timing them, whether it's math, facts, start to get the message that speed is an indicator if I'm smart or not. And if I'm not fast, I'm not smart. Mm-hmm. And how that then kicks in to the point where actually some students, because they're not quick, they just stop.
Right.
Then. So they stop reading. They stop because I'm not quick like my friends and my teacher wants me. I'm, you know, and so the incentive to continue to dig deep, to potentially slowly read. Oh, we do away with that. And what you pointed out then, Jess, in fact, we should be really concentrating on helping kids slow down
mm-hmm.
and make sense of and understand and ask questions. Oh, so much on the science of reading. Just again, you are on it, on it, on it.
So let's take a moment to slow down for our moment of zen. Civil disobedience. That's not our problem. Our problem is that people are obedient all over the world in the face of poverty and starvation and stupidity and war and cruelty. Our problem is that people are obedient while the jails are full of petty thieves and all the while the grand thieves are running the country. That's our problem.
Man, thanks everybody for busting pencils. We love that you get to spend Saturday with us, or, you know, if you're downloading. I was just thinking of that moment of Zinn, though, Jess. Who mm-hmm. knew that Howard Zinn was going to quote the reality that we're existing in 2025?
Well, you know what they say, Tim? History may not repeat, but it definitely rhymes.
It definitely rhymes. Hey, and if you love those moments of Zen, make sure that you are out there doing your best, downloading, subscribing, whether you get your podcasts on Apple, Spotify, however you get them, subscribe. That way you'll never miss a Busted Pencils. And also, if you're doing the Saturday show, the easiest way, the Civic Media app. You can download that Civic Media app. Therefore, you know, not only Busted Pencils, you can get all of the great Civic Media programming.
Indeed. There's a lot of good stuff there.
There's a ton of good stuff. Lots of great people, you know, and that's what we like to do here is continue to, you know, democracy. Hey, democracy is a reality that we need to hold on to very tightly. As we point out too, these moments, you know, we are feeling the pressure to really try to understand and come to a reality of how do we hold our democracy together? Well, one of the ways you can do that is listening to Busted Pencils, everybody. Thanks for having a great day and keep busting pencils.
Is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH, Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Milwaukee film critic Matt Miller and Northeast Wisconsin hip-hop artist and musician Matt Harper joins me in studio. We're going to light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8. Earl
Daryl Ingram.
Mayor Johnson, we used to have a saying called a switcheroo. Talking about one thing while behind the scenes, there's a greater issue.
This man was elected president of the United States to focus in on making everyday life more affordable. But our push to remove lead service lines, our health department, are impacted by the things that the Trump administration have targeted since they've been in office. Yeah, it's been a huge switcheroo. It's not been about saving folks money. I mean, this is going to cause more pain.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. This is the Buzz of the North, WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packard. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio has arrived in Israel. This after Hamas militants released three more hostages, including an American, as part of the ceasefire agreement. In exchange, Israel releasing more than 350 Palestinian prisoners.
Now the focus has turned to very quickly to the other hostages who are still being held captive. And that includes six who are still believed to be alive, and then eight who are believed to have passed away. But this first phase, a total of 33 hostages are set to be freed as part of the ceasefire agreement.
Next on Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency chopping block, the IRS. ABC News has learned about 15,000 IRS employees have been identified for possible termination as early as next week. At the Munich Security Conference, Ukraine President Zelensky said that his country, as well as Europe, should have a seat at the table when there's discussions about Europe being made by the U.S. and Russia. This is ABC News. This week,